Minnesota State, the Committee on State, Local Government, and Veterans is coming to order, and we have a quorum. How about that? Today, we're going to do overviews on a number of important ethnic councils, and we're going to take up a couple of pieces of legislation. And I would like us to get started right away. And so we'd invite Linda Sloan, who is the Executive Director for the Council of Minnesotans on African Heritage, to join us. We will spend, 10 or so minutes just doing an overview of the work of each of these councils. We're so happy you're here. Thank you so much for joining us. It would be great if you'd introduce yourself for the record and then proceed to your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Linda Sloan. I'm the Executive Director for the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. It is indeed a pleasure to be here before you to speak about the work of the council. Perfect. It's always helpful to have somebody who understands technology as a part of what you're doing. So again, Linda Sloan, I'm here with the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. We were empowered over 40 years ago by the legislature as the Council for Minnesotans, and about 6 or 7 years ago, the name was changed to the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. Our mission really is to ensure that people of African heritage, that we participate and also benefit in everything that the state has to offer, whether it's social, whether it's economic resources, political, or what have you. We want to be at the table, and when we walk away from the table, we want to make sure that there is some benefit to our community. Our charge is fivefold, really. The main one really is to advise you as well as the governor on the issues. So, for example, when the tragedy with George Floyd happened, the council was there to provide advice to let people know, here's what's going on in our community, here's how we're feeling. We also advise on statutes and rules, review bills. We serve as a liaison to our federal government as it relates to the African heritage population within the state of Minnesota, as well as local governments and private organizations. And then on a much smaller scale, we implement programs to solve problems in the community, as well as publicize any of the accomplishments of the African heritage people. We're 505,000 plus strong, which is about 7.4% of Minnesota's total population, which makes us the second largest population group in the state. And when we refer to African heritage, many people don't understand what that exactly means. It means African American as well as the African immigrant population. So those may be individuals who came directly from Africa over, but there are also Afro-Caribbeans who and others who might be also of African descent. Our council has 11 members, and they are all selected and appointed by the governor. We have 4 sitting legislative members, 2 from the Senate and 2 from the House. So right now, Senator Fateh is from the Senate. And then we're just welcoming Representative Hudson to the council as well. And that means we have 2 openings. We have a seat for a commissioner, and we have 4 full-time paid staff. The work of the council basically is threefold: community outreach, engagement, legislative policy work, and then the advising of lawmakers and executive leadership. Pardon me. Under community outreach, we try to make sure that we don't just focus on what's going on in the Twin Cities. So we develop relationships all throughout the state. We do summer outreach roundtables. We want to make sure that we are in community so that we understand the issues. In order to bring the issues forward, we have to first understand them so that we can come back, have conversations with you, and understand what the implications are for legislation that you're trying to move forward or to change. We also do surveys, again, a way at connecting with community, and we try to make sure that the community is connected to you as well. And then we do a bulletin, so if any of you want to sign up for that, 5,000 plus people get this bulletin. If you have things that you want to promote that makes sense for our community, we are happy to do that as well. Again, we're at that intersection of community, lawmakers, and state enterprise, governor and state agencies. Our legislative priorities for this year, economic security. We want to make sure that the state is investing in businesses, employment, and workforce development. We know that there is low unemployment overall for the state, but that is not the fact in the African Heritage community. So one of the things that we do is we look at what bills are being put forward. We look to see if there's some new legislation that needs to happen just to make sure that people of African Heritage can become employed and make a significant contribution to the state. Education equity is another one, another place. We were really hit hard with the pandemic. We want to close those opportunity gaps. Our students, they deserve access to high quality academic education. They deserve mental health resources and technology resources. Again, the pandemic hit us hard. Many students did not have technology, they didn't have internet. So we're excited that there are proposals that are going forward that will address these issues. Health justice, again, lots of health challenges. The pandemic really just exacerbated everything that was negative in our community. Lots of health challenges with COVID, and so we want to make sure that there are bills and legislation that comes forward that addresses these and closes that gap, that disparity. No secret that public safety is at the top of our list. Public safety, police accountability is clearly important, and then also community safety. So it goes hand in hand, law enforcement as well as community. We both have to work in tandem, but we must work and we must all be accountable for our actions. And then lastly, focus on strong families and communities. Really, that is how you create an amazing, wonderful society where everyone can thrive. We want to make sure that we're investing funding in technical investments, in child welfare, housing. Everyone deserves a place to lay their head. And just anything that relates to the welfare of families and students. So strong families and communities. Then just to kind of close out, just a few projects that we worked on. So we were at the beginning of the Missing and Murdered African American Women's Task Force. I'm sure that you have already heard much about this. We helped select the members. We participated in the meetings. So we have been there to help drive that initiative, post-board engagement. Public safety is huge. Police and law enforcement and accountability is something that we definitely have to press for. There are things going on right now that we're not happy with. So we have to make sure that every one of us is accountable and are fulfilling the work with morality and integrity that we are assigned to do. So we've been working a lot with the Excellence Advisory Council that works with the Post Board. Increasing Teachers of Color Act. I probably don't need to speak to this. I'm imagining that my counterparts will speak to this because we're working on this together, but we know that children learn better from people that look like them. So we cannot have children of color who don't see themselves, who don't see role models. The Crown Act, I should be able to wear my hair however I want and in its natural state. And I can tell you, I experienced the issue with being penalized for wearing my hair naturally as well. African American Family Preservation Act, concerning where do we need to send our kids when they have to be removed from the home. And we believe that putting them with a family member is a better option where they can be safe instead of dumping them into the foster care system. And then Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth Act, which passed last year, but there's still some prenatal bills that are on the docket. And again, that goes back to providing, creating safety and healthy communities. So that is it for today. Again, thank you for having me. I enjoyed sharing a little bit about who we are. This is just a microcosm, and I would love to meet with you at a later date to just fill you in and get you engaged in our work.
Thank you, Director Sloan, very much for your presentation. It is succinct, and we asked for that today, so I really appreciate it. I do want to make sure if members have specific questions that we make time for that. But you and others will be before this committee again as we work through the session. And so I don't see questions from people, so I will say thank you very much. Excuse me. We have one question from my colleague, Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Executive Director Sloan. I was following along before I was able to come into the room. I'm just asking if you reach out to my office about the Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth bills. I'd love to talk more about them.
And we would love to meet with you.
Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to working with you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to invite Rosa Tuck to join us and to talk with us about the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Welcome to the committee, Executive Director Tuck and colleagues. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed to your testimony.
Buenas tardes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rosa Tuck, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee this afternoon. I'm here with part of my team, Katia Cepeda, the Legislative and Policy Director in Education, and Nicauris Heredia Rosario, Legislative and Policy Director in Economic Development and Financial Stability. Today, we will be presenting an overview of the agency, illustrating the communities that we serve, telling you some of the challenges and opportunities that we have heard during our listening sessions in the last years, and the current work that the team is doing during this historic legislative session. I believe that by now you might have already received a package with our 2022 annual report and also our 2022 community listening sessions report, along with our legislative and budget priorities based on our community and stakeholder engagement. So we hope that you find some time to review our materials. We welcome the chance to visit with you about the Latino communities in your district. So as my colleague Linda Sloan indicated, our authority derives from Minnesota Statute 15.0145, and this year the council is celebrating 45 years of bringing the voice of Latino Minnesotans to state government by advising and influencing in policy and legislation and working with the community. As Linda explained before, we have the same structure in terms of how our board is composed. We focus our work on three main areas: education, health equity, and economic development, integrating the immigration experiences and stories of the communities we serve. We also collaborate with the two other ethnic councils when we see alignment in our respective priorities, and we support each other in our work. Our core team is four full-time employees, myself, our legislative and policy directors, and our office manager, Wendy Sanchez. This session, our work is supported and strengthened by one temporary full-time employee, Patricia Torres-Rey, whom you know well in this body, and also two paid interns, Alejandro and Nayeli. All of us are bilingual and bicultural. Together, we are monitoring, tracking, assessing, and advising our current legislation and the legislator. And importantly, our council members, each one of them representing a congressional district, support our staff by meeting with legislators in their districts, especially with new members, to inform and educate them about the Latino community and the council as a resource and a bridge to the community. So to tell you more about the communities that we serve, I'll pass it to Nicauris now.
Good afternoon, everyone, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Latino community is one of the fastest growing and youngest population in Minnesota.
Can I interrupt you just for a moment so you introduce yourself for the record,
absolutely,
please?
Absolutely. My apologies.
No worries.
My name is Nicauris Heredia Rosario. I am the Legislative and Policy Director in the area of economic development for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. As I was saying, the Latino community is one of the fastest growing and youngest population here in Minnesota. Between 2010 and 2020, the Latino community has grown by 38% compared to 7.6% for Minnesota's overall population. We went from 250,258 residents, or 4.7% of the state's population in 2010, to 345,640, or 6.1% in 2020. And it is projected that by 2035, our community will grow to more than 500,000 residents. As you can see in the map, the Latino community live and are important part of the community in all Minnesotan counties, particularly those top five counties, Nobles, Watonwan, Candiohi, Mauer, and Freeborn have very high percentage of Latinos. And 4 in 5 Latino Minnesotans are U.S. citizens. That is about 79% of the Latino community here in the state. We are also a very diverse community. 66% of Latinos in the state are of Mexican heritage. 5% are of Puerto Rican heritage. But there are other heritage among our community, including other countries in Central and South America, as well as the Caribbean and Spain. We also would like to highlight that 127,000 Latinos are eligible to vote here in the state of Minnesota.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, as you can see, the Latino community represents a significant human, social, cultural, and political capital to the state of Minnesota. Our population is very young, entrepreneurial, contributes to the tax base of the state, and many of us were designated essential during the worst of the pandemic. We have been resilient in many ways, and we continue to be exceptionally productive Minnesotans, as this slide shows. But despite being critical assets to the state, persistent and damaging disparities and gaps remain, exacerbated by the pandemic. During this historic legislative session, Minnesota can and must invest in Latino communities by making sure to include and expand opportunities for children and their families, and especially the youth, so that they can all attain their full potential from cradle to college and beyond. So, with this in mind, the Council tries to bring solutions to the table and to your attention during each legislative session. These solutions, as I mentioned before, are informed by the community. So these and other achievements during the previous biennium will be presented by Katia next.
Thank you, Rosa. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katia Cepeda, and I am the Legislative and Policy Director in Education. So we have many great achievements to be proud of here at the Council. We led and co-led 7 bills, 2 of which, the ITCA in Higher Education and the Cosmetology Bill, finished we were able to get across the finish line. We informed and educated legislators through different events such as coffee and policy to inform legislators and also engage our communities in a bipartisan fashion. We launched roundtable conversations around Latino higher education attainment and workforce development, and we continue to have those conversations, bringing different stakeholders, not just from the metro area, but throughout greater Minnesota as well. We advised the governor's office and 11 interagency groups ranging from health equity, workforce development, education, language access to immigration. We also conducted 6 listening sessions in greater Minnesota and in the metro area. One of them was in Red Wing, and the others, that was in 2021. And in 2022, what you have was Owatonna, Crookston, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and am I missing any?
Brooklyn Center.
And Brooklyn Centers. We also produced 3 bilingual reports for legislators, policymakers, and public at large. And these have a demographic report based on the 2020 census, a report on Town Hall in Red Wing, and a report of a community engagement, which Rosa already mentioned to you that you have in front of you. We have partnered with Latino arts organizations to unveil the first altar, the Dia de los Muertos, or Altar of Day of the Dead, and we also at the Capitol. And this was the first ever Day of the Dead altar at the state capitol. And we also worked to have the governor do a proclamation, which was the first proclamation to this holiday in the United States. We produced 16 bilingual newsletters and 5 bilingual legislative reports as well.
Thank you so much, Katia. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we would like to provide an overview of our 2023 legislative priorities this session. In the area of economic development, the council is working on a bill that would create a new hair technician license, making it easier for Minnesotans to become licensed and operate as hair technician in the state. This is one of the legislations that we have worked in the past that Katia mentioned, the cosmetology bill. We're also supporting legislation mandating financial literacy classes for high school students. We understand the importance, and it's something that we heard directly from our youth in our community listening sessions, as well as the driver's licenses for all, regardless of immigration status. About 46% of Latinos in the state of Minnesota are not covered by a workplace retirement plan. So the council supports the Minnesota Secure Choice Retirement Program Act, which would provide employees without access to retirement savings the opportunity to save for retirement. The council also supports the expansions of the Working Family Tax Credit and the Homestead Classification to include individuals that use the Federal Taxpayer Identification Number, or ITIN. More generally, we're also working on strategies to advance Minnesota's higher education attainment goal that was set by the legislature in 2015. And now I'll pass it on to Katia.
So for our education and mental health, again, these were formulated based on the answers that we received or feedback from our Latinx youth through our listening sessions. The main one being that they wanted to see representation in the classroom through the teachers of color. Therefore, MCLA continues to support the work of the Coalition to Increase the Teachers of Color Act, and not just in K-12, but also through higher ed. One of the other issues is multilingual learners. And this funding has not kept up to the needs of the multilingual learners. So MCLA continues to work with partners such as Latino Lead to advance not just legislation, but also funding for ELL education. Another contributing factor that students expressed a high urgency was mental health. Especially not just with the pandemic, but even prior to the pandemic, mental health crisis, they were in a mental health crisis. And not just the pandemic, but also current events that have been affecting our Latino community have affected their mental health, and they lack access to culturally sustaining mental health resources. So therefore, MCLA continues to monitor and work with community partners to ensure how current legislation is being implemented, identify areas where it needs to be strengthened, to make sure that we also have therapists that have access, that our community has access to them, and that they also go into that workforce as well. Along with that is also affordable childcare. MCLA supports legislation that works to improve access to childcare because we see that this is also a barrier for many of the students in our community because many times they've had to put their education aside to be able to help their family meet the needs of their childcare, especially in Greater Minnesota where childcare is very scarce and we see high rates of access to childcare just closing with many centers or even family childcares.
And I'm going to ask you to wrap.
So look at you, awesome. Slide.
Okay, please.
So Madam Chair, if you have any questions, we will be more than happy to respond to them today or again, meet with each one of you at a later time.
Director Tuck, very much. Thank you for being here. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you for your presentation. And then I'd like to invite Sia Herr, who is the Executive Director for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. And again, we're spending about 10 minutes on each of these. I really appreciate the compressed amount of time, and of course, we're gonna come back to this work again. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourselves for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, just for the record, Andy and I did practice our presentation, and when we practice it, we average about 7 minutes. So we promise we'll do our best to stick to that. So members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to come before all of you today. I've met some of you already in one-on-one conversations for the purpose of having a more nuanced conversation about our legislative requests this year. And I will be meeting some of you shortly. So thank you for those of you who've already made time for me. Again, for the record, my name is Sia Herr. I'm the executive director at the State Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. I'm in my 10th year as executive director, which makes me the longest serving director at the three ethnic councils. For the purpose of this afternoon's presentation, I also have two members of my team. And if you'll indulge me, I'll just turn it over to them and have them briefly introduce themselves, and then I'll take over the presentation.
Thank you, Sia, Chair Murphy, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Morris, and I serve at the Council as Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison.
And my name is Saraswati Singh. I was appointed by Governor Walz to represent the Asian Indian community, and I was elected chair just recently, and I'm very proud of that. In my day job, I've been asked to communicate that as well. I'm a prosecutor at the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, where I handle murder, sexual assault, domestic assault cases, and everything in between. Thank you for your time.
All right, so thank you. Members, our colleagues at the other two councils have already presented, and so we won't belabor the points they've already made pertaining to our shared enabling statute. As you know, all three ethnic councils are statewide cabinet executive branch agencies. Our council is the youngest of the three councils. We were created in 1985 at the time when Asian Pacific Minnesotans comprised of less than 1% of the state's total population. Today we make up slightly less than 7% of the state's total population. The premise for the creation of our office in 1985 and its existence since then remains intact, and that is to ensure that the incredibly diverse communities that make up the Asian Pacific Minnesotan community that the realities of these communities are heard, understood, and taken into consideration by the state's lawmaking body as well as the executive branch of government. Andy, thank you. Our council is governed by a board consisting of 15 members, 11 of whom are appointed by the governor, and 4 are appointed by legislative members, 2 from the House, 2 from the Senate, bipartisan, bicameral. Our board oversees a small team of 4 FTEs when we are fully staffed. I serve as executive director. Anjali Cameron, who many of you know, serves as my research director. Andy's here with me today, and our office manager is in the office, following us closely this afternoon. Because our team is so small due to our budget, we also employ several contractors who have hard-to-find expertise to ensure that we as a council are more readily positioned to succeed in carrying out our statutory responsibilities. Slide number four. The population at the heart of our agency is Minnesota's Asian Pacific ancestry communities. We are estimated at 370,000 strong. We reside in every single one of Minnesota's 87 counties, as far north as Baudette and War Road, and as far south as Marshall and Walnut Grove. The slide in front of you is an overview of the 10 largest ancestry groups under our umbrella. Most of you are very familiar with our Hmong, our Asian Indian, our Chinese, and our Korean ancestry communities. You may be surprised to hear that we also represent under the Asian Pacific Council umbrella, and therefore we also work very closely with communities such as the Chukis from the Federated States of Micronesia, the Lhotshampas, who are ethnic Nepalese from Bhutan, the Karenni from the mountainous regions of Myanmar, and our newest refugee community, the Afghan evacuees. This concludes my portion of the presentation, members. Next, Andy will continue the presentation, and he'll speak to the legislative work that we do to uplift and center our community. Andy.
Thank you, Sia. Again, for the record, my name is Andy Morris. The work we do at the Council as we strive to carry out our roles as the advisor to the legislature and the governor, the advocate on behalf of Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and as a liaison between state government and these communities of Minnesotans, includes producing original research to provide compelling and accurate understandings of the many communities that make up our population, advising the legislative and executive branches of state government on necessary changes in policy and administrative actions, facilitating relationships between government leaders and our communities, and providing logistical and technical support to our nonprofits, for-profits, and other organizations for whom government is still a largely daunting entity to engage with. Every biennium, we come before the legislature to provide an overview of our work. This year, we can say with full confidence that Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and ultimately the state of Minnesota as a whole, are better off because we have ensured a more thorough count of Asian Pacific Minnesotans in the 2020 census via the API Complete Count Committee, which we launched in November 2019 and sunsetted in late 2020. Assisted with Asian Pacific Minnesotan business owners and everyday community members with navigating state government to access pandemic and civil unrest resources. Advocated for legislation that addresses important issues as identified by our community, such as gender-based violence prevention, increasing teachers of color, and anti-Asian hate. And most recently, an effort that we are proud of is our effort to facilitate the Afghan Evacuee Roundtable. At the request of DHS's Resettlement Programs Office, for 15 months, our council convened weekly conversations between community leaders, organizations, and state government. These conversations centered on connecting stakeholders for the purpose of sharing and coordinating resources for our Afghan evacuees. We just sunsetted the roundtable in December 2022. Madam Chair and members, beyond these brief points, the Council accomplished so much more, and our impact is greater than what I have been able to share with you in these last few minutes. For more detailed understanding of our work, I invite you to review our legislatively mandated annual report, which is included in your materials today. In the course of fulfilling our mandated duties, the Council pursues a biennial legislative agenda based specifically on the results of a community priority survey that we conduct every 2 years. For the new biennium, the Council also conducted a series of targeted conversations and solicited feedback at various events across our communities. Based on the results of this survey, our top priority issues for the 2023 and 2024 legislative sessions are mental health and/or substance abuse, higher education, equity, achievement gaps, and access to healthcare. In addition to these community-identified priorities, the Council also maintains ongoing positions on data disaggregation, domestic and gender-based violence prevention, and workforce development. More information on the methodology and results of the survey and the formation of the Council's legislative agenda will be available in a report to be published on the Council's website. This report is made available to the Council's board and to all interested parties to ensure a transparent, informed process as we set and pursue our agenda. At the Council, as a non-cabinet executive branch agency, we recognize the importance of our statutory duty to support and enhance the capacity of all elements of state government to more effectively serve the interests of all Minnesotans, including Asian and Pacific Islander Minnesotans. Chair Murphy and members of the committee, thank you. This concludes our presentation. C and I are available for any questions that you may have.
Nice work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the information, members. Other questions? All right. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, you mentioned in the council's impact, it says you led the Afghan evacuee community roundtable to assist with the Afghan resettlement. I take it you're still in the lead on that, and I'm wondering, has that resettlement been completed?
Director Herr.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, as Andy indicated in his portion of the presentation, we've sunsetted that roundtable, and that that effort was led by our research director, Anjali Cameron, who is currently on maternity leave. Now, the resettlement of refugees, whether it's the Afghan refugees or any other group of refugees, absolutely plays out during a period of that is absolutely more than 15 months. And so a quick answer to your question is no, the resettlement of the Afghan evacuees is not over. It's just that we've sunsetted that entity. And in lieu of that entity, there is another entity that has been established to take on what we consider to be the third phase of the resettlement effort of the evacuees. We'd be happy, when I do meet with you, we'd happy to go into more details on the effort.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Follow-up. So can you give us an idea of where you are in the process, or whoever the organizations you're working with, where are we in the first quarter, halfway, three quarters, where are we in that process of resettling Afghan refugees?
Director Herr.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, I don't have an answer that I'm comfortable giving you right now. I'd be happy to talk with Anjali Cameron, our research director, who led this roundtable, and get back to you. But Andy was also working, supporting Anjali in that initiative. So if, Madam Chair and Senator, if you'll indulge me, I'll just ask if Andy would like to contribute to answering your question, Senator.
Thank you, Sia. Mm-hmm. Senator Anderson, as Sia mentioned, the council's role in facilitating the Afghan evacuee roundtable has concluded, but we continue to participate and remain in contact with the current iteration of that process, which is currently at this stage led by community themselves. We are also still in the process of engaging with them to make sure that they are aware of resources that are available, that they are able to address challenges that they continue to encounter in the relocation process, and ensuring that both at the state and then to the degree that we are able to keep them aware of resources and processes both at the state and the federal level.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
To the testifier, you are not necessarily the ones in charge of this. You've given it off to someone else to resettle these Afghan refugees. Am I correct in saying that?
Director Herr.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, that's a great question, Senator. To be clear, we are not in charge of resettling the Afghan evacuees. We were asked by DHS to help facilitate that second roundtable after the statewide task force on resettling the Afghan evacuees was sunsetted. And so we were just facilitating relationships between the various stakeholders on the ground to ensure that stakeholders, that there's a healthy level of communication between all stakeholders, including nonprofit organizations who have resources such as employment, development resources, such as food shelves and whatnot. We were just there to help ensure that stakeholders knew what that the right hand knew what the left hand was doing, and that community members from the Afghan community could be seamlessly woven into the fabric of our society to the extent possible. So we are not in charge of the resettlement. We were just assisting with the resettlement effort, and it made sense given that the Afghan community falls under the jurisdiction of our umbrella as an Asian Pacific Islander community. And it made sense since we sit at the intersection point of state government, local government, and all of the communities, as well as including our nonprofits.
Thank you, Director Herr. and all of you. If there is information, Executive Director Herr, from you or Ms. Cameron, when she returns from maternity leave that you'd like to share with the committee, please send it to my office and I'll make sure and share it with the balance of the committee members.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And now that we know that some of you are really interested in the resettlement of Afghan evacuees, we'll be prepared when we come in for our one-on-one meetings with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, and I appreciate you being here. We're going to invite Senator Swadzinski up to the table to present his bill. And while he is getting settled, I just want to say thank you to all of the ethnic councils for the work that you do to make sure that we're clear about the lives of Minnesotans, and that we have our eye on the work that you're leading, which is to assure equity and an inclusive Minnesota. And I look forward to the continued input that you will bring to our work, and I will look to you and rely upon you in partnership to make sure that we're doing the very best job that we can for everybody in Minnesota. So I just really thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to the work that we're going to do together in this budget and in the months and years ahead. Thank you very much.
I must have cleared them out a little prematurely, I think.
Senator Swadzinski, you and Senator Kunesh are each going to present a bill today. We're grateful that you're here before the committee. Would you like to put your bill before the committee and begin?
I would, and I have the A2 amendment.
Senator Swadzinski is here with us today with Senate File 194. So I would move Senate File 194 so that it is before the committee. And Senator Swadzinski has an author's amendment, I move for you the A2 amendment for our consideration. Senator Swadzinski, did you want to say anything about it, or should we just add this to the bill, and then you can talk about it along with the bill?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. The A2 amendment just fixes a bunch of technical terminology. It doesn't really change the spirit or heart of the bill, so thank you.
Before we proceed, seeing no questions, Senator Swadzinski moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And the motion is adopted.
Thank you again, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I do have three testifiers. Oh, okay. They're on Zoom. A few years back, like 25, Eden Prairie, where I was privileged to teach, had a school board, obviously, and they had a student member of the school board. And it was a non-voting member, but nonetheless, the students felt like they were being heard. And even though the member was a non-voting member of the school board, I always thought it was so cool that the students had a voice on the school board. For reasons unknown to me, the school board just kind of went away, that position. And I always wondered, what a great thing for students to feel part of the process, and that they're to elevate and celebrate that their voices and their opinions. And so when this was brought to my attention about the Minnesota Youth Council, I full on heartily support the concept, the belief, and what they're going to be trying to do. And they'll be telling you more about what they're all about. But we're honored, among our 67 LAs that I'm aware of, one is a graduate of the Minnesota Youth Council, or what was the Youth Advisory Council at that time. So anyways, with that said, I'd like to introduce my three testifiers.
Senator Swadzinski, I understand we have three testifiers, Brandon Brooks, Ava Roots, and Charlie Schmidt.
That is correct.
All right. Well, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And I think up first we have
Thank you, Madam
Brooks.
Chair.
There you go. Welcome.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brandon Brooks. I live in Minneapolis, and I'm the Director of Youth Partnerships at Minnesota Alliance with Youth, which is a nonprofit that hosts the Minnesota Youth Council. For the past 5 years, I've had the honor of working alongside amazing student leaders like we have with us today, on the Youth Council, and I'm proud to support Senate File 194 and the creation of the Minnesota Youth Advisory Council. In my time with the Alliance, the youth representatives of the Minnesota Youth Council have shared invaluable knowledge with decision makers in Minnesota. They provided written and verbal testimony, sharing their youth perspectives on numerous bills during their hearings. And as Senator Swadzinski mentioned, we've had numerous young people from the council go on to be president of the Capitol and even serving as LAs right now. They've convened thousands of young people to share knowledge and resources through youth-led events like the Youth and Educational Leadership Summit and the Youth Day at the Capitol. They partnered with the Minnesota Department of Education to train hundreds of teachers on youth-adult partnership models. They've worked with our community partners and other nonprofits in our sector to create a number of resources for students, from civic engagement workshops, how to advocate for issues close to your heart, and things like dating safety tips. To keep our youth and connected. They advocate for young people's right to mental health resources, safe and equitable learning environments, and they address the realities of climate change for their generation and for the generations to follow. In all of this work that they've done, I've seen one thing consistently, and that is that the young people want more. They're hungry, they're passionate, they're fearless in their drive to lift the voices of young people in our state. And they're not just ready to lead, they are leading us already. The Minnesota Youth Advisory Council is the next step and the best step that we have to bridging the gap between the Capitol and the communities of young people around the state. It's been a privilege for me to learn from and to lead with the students on the Minnesota Youth Council. And I'm intentional when I say lead with them. The youth reps on the MYC have shown me what is possible when we as adults hold space for young people and students to share their perspectives, and we receive them with respect and honor and in the spirit of partnership. The opportunity to lift youth voice for the betterment of all Minnesotans is before us, and I urge all of you to consider a future illuminated by the experience, perspective, and wisdom of our young people. I'm asking that you vote yes on Senate File 194, and let's build the Minnesota Youth Advisory Council, because our students and, frankly, our state deserves it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. We appreciate your testimony. Up next, Ava Root.
If I may ask if it would be possible for Charlie to go next. I know he has to get back to class as it's during the school day, and I have a little bit of time.
I appreciate that, and we can certainly accommodate that. So welcome to the committee, Charlie Schmidt. Please state your name for the record and proceed before you go back to class.
All right. Hi, I'm Charlie Schmidt. Thank you so much for accommodating for me. I appreciate that. All right. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee for giving me time to speak today. My name is Charlie Schmidt. I'm a junior at Washburn High School in Minneapolis, and I'm currently serving my second year on the Minnesota Youth Council. For those who don't know, the Minnesota Youth Council is a collection of 36 youths from across the state that work together to advocate for and pass legislation on issues that are important to youth. We're also the only legislatively mandated youth group in the country. Last year, I testified three times on bills that were important for youth, and one of those bills was passed into law. The Minnesota Youth Council is a life-changing experience. In your time at the Youth Council, you learn how to advocate for yourself and for other youth through the legislature and how to make sure your message is heard. You get the chance to connect with people from across the state that you never would have connected with before, and you get the opportunity to consider and learn new perspectives pertaining to youth issues. Without the Youth Council, none of this would happen. I joined the Youth Council in the beginning of my sophomore year of high school because I want to do something to help out youth instead of sitting and talking about all the issues I have with the way things are run. I can honestly say that the Minnesota Youth Council is the most rewarding experience of my life and has helped me better myself and my community. I'm here today to make sure that young people across the state can have the same experience as me for years to come. I'm here because without this bill, the Youth Council will eventually dissolve and youth voice will go back to getting discarded and ignored. I'm here to set a precedent for other states that youth voice does matter and we have something important to say. Young people make up about 25% of the state's total population. Our voice matters, and I assure you, we have something important to say. I implore you to vote yes on Senate File 194 today, not just for me, but for future youth to come. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Schmidt, and welcome to the committee, Ava Roots.
Thank you to the chair and members of the committee for your time today. My name is Ava Roots, and I'm a senior at Stillwater Area High School, as well as the Congressional District 4 chair and the Education Equity Co-chair on the Minnesota Youth Council. As both the first state to legislatively mandate youth voice in government and a model nationally for what student participation can be, I'm proud to call Minnesota my home. Over the years, the Minnesota Youth Council has provided critical insight into the lives of young people in the state and provisions and legislation to best address youth issues in Minnesota. From the Council on Latino Affairs to the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage and, of course, the Asian American and Pacific Islanders Council as well, we as a state have decided time and time again in our history that representation is critical to our values and the continuation of our democratic republic. Institutionalizing youth voice through the Minnesota Youth Advisory Council bill guarantees that young people and early voters who are often underrepresented in government have a voice in the policies that impact us most. Making sure that all stakeholders, including young people, have representation is critical to making grounded and financially sound decisions that derive their strength from listening to those impacted. Incorporating youth voice as an essential part of our government ensures that the decisions we make draw from the lives and experiences with previous policies of young people from all backgrounds and geographic areas of Minnesota. Investing in the Minnesota Youth Advisory Council means investing in the lives and leadership of young people in Minnesota and the future of our state. The Minnesota Youth Council has grounded me for 2 years and provided me with a basis in government and civic leadership that I would not be the same without. As we stand at a critical juncture in deciding what we value as a state, I hope we choose our youth. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Ms. Roots. I appreciate your testimony. Senator Swadzinski.
I have nothing to add other than it was fun to hear a testifier say I have to get back to class. It was wonderful to hear. I have nothing to add or detract from the testifiers. They did a great job.
Thank you. Members, do you have questions for the senator, for the author of this bill? Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Swadzinski. Two questions. Page 2 of the bill, the quorum for the council is 40%. I don't know if I've heard of a 40% quorum before. Why not the conventional 50 plus 1?
What line, Senator?
2.29.
Senator Swadzinski, you have a guest joining you. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I have not heard that either, Senator.
Phone a friend, Senator.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. It's a good question.
Hi, my name is Kate Sukumal. I am with the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, the organization that's currently hosting the Minnesota Youth Council. I guess I don't have a specific answer to that question, but I'm assuming it relates to the desire to have a council of young people that represents the demographics of the state and being able to hold some space available if the current makeup of the council was not representative and being able to ensure that some spots were held in order to achieve that.
And because there's 3 from every congressional district, maybe because sometimes they can't make it, maybe. Thank you.
And Senator Swadzinski, as I understand and have listened to you talk about this proposal, it is built upon the language that we're familiar with our ethnic councils. And those ethnic councils have had a quorum number like this, in part because they've had some issues with participation and their ability to get their work done. So as I understand the work of the councils, we're building upon that, and that's why this language is before us.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Swadzinski. I think I kind of had the same observations, Madam Chair, if the prevailing notion is we can only get 40% to conduct a meeting, that doesn't speak strongly to the health of the organization, regardless of the organization. You would think we could get at least 50 plus 1 to attend meetings, but Something for you to consider and ponder. Also, two other questions. One, just generally.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Swazinski, why the remake of this council? I mean, I look at the repealer, and the current committee we have now seems very similar. I added them up. I think we had 36 or something in composition currently or something like that, and this one comes to 28. Why 28 plus, anyway, I can't remember what the number was. Maybe your friend will help.
Yeah, sure.
Thank
but
you.
I think I know the answer too, but the expert.
Thank you, Senators and Chair. So the current iteration of the Minnesota Youth Council, and as it has been for the last 10 years, has been housed at Minnesota Alliance with Youth, which is a nonprofit. And while we absolutely have loved having the Youth Council be part of our programming, we are excited for the possibility to have this be a state-run agency and have the young people have an official voice in state government. And we would welcome the opportunity to have this be something that is funded year over year. We've actually only had 2 years of funding from the state government to enact this program, and so we look forward to being able to have this be something that is not only part of how Minnesota runs its government, but also something that can be housed outside of a nonprofit organization who we all know has, you know, seasons of prosperity and sometimes not so much. So this would be a great way to have this be living kind of in perpetuity.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. You know, I had one observation, and maybe are we going to take amendments, Madam Chair, soon? Or the one observation was Senator Swazinski on line 1.18. I realized that you're asking for the consent of the parents for the governor-appointed youth member, and I was encouraged by that, but really struck by the contrast between that approach and the one that was taken on the floor on Saturday morning early. Either there's kind of a double standard look to whether or not we should have a parent's consent, or maybe there's progress in a better direction happening.
They might just be different issues, Senator.
Nice.
I appreciate your detective work.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If other questions, otherwise I have an amendment, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Coran.
Madam Chair, I think the reference to the 40% quorum was referred to the councils, the ethnic councils as well, and I think Ms. Herr may be able to bring that answer to us, or at least to attempt to provide us some clarity.
Director Herr, did you want to share something with the committee?
I could, Madam Chair.
If you have something to share with the committee, please join us quickly. We do have one more bill after this, so we're going to keep moving. Welcome back to the committee, Director Herr.
Madam Chair, Senator Coran, thank you. My understanding from talking with the House Chief Author on this particular bill is that this legislative proposal is drafted after the Ethnic Council's enabling statute. And since I am the longest serving executive director, I was here in 2016 when we restructured the Ethnic Councils. And the rationale behind the 40% is that on a board of 15 members, with four legislative members, we recognize that during the legislative session, the members might be quite busy with their legislative responsibilities. And so the 40% quorum is a provision to ensure that the body, that the board could continue to carry out its work without waiting for the four legislative members to, without waiting for a quorum that's at 50% plus one, the traditional quorum.
Thank you, Director Herr. I appreciate that. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that it says in the bill here that this council is supposed to meet during session hours, and I'm wondering to get that 50 plus 1% quorum, if they could meet out past session rather than having to wait for four legislative people, minority and majority, to show up. Why not have it so that they could meet or have a meeting after that? Is there a problem there?
Senator Swazinski.
Well, we are pretty busy during session, but I'll let my testifier answer that, perhaps, from personal experience.
Senators, Chair, I think that's a wonderful idea, and as we could tell from our testifiers, you know, students of in high school age have a lot going on during the day as well, so to have flexibility and when that happened, that would be wonderful.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Another question, Senator Sinski. It talks about the governor making appointments to congressional districts. Why not have the congressional districts themselves choose their members rather than having the governor? I mean, if those people who are elected to those offices as congressional, why not let their offices choose three people to be a part of this from their particular? I mean, we got eight congressional districts and eight Congress individuals, and they also have chiefs of staff and people that work out in the field. I mean, who would better know than the governor?
Senator Swadzinski.
Thoughts? Yeah, that's a great idea, but I'm not going to weigh in on that because I don't know why it's done this way. But maybe the governor, maybe that's the process in existence, is that the governor reaches out to the congressional district's field offices and says, I'm looking for three names. Do you have them available to us? But Senator Anderson, that's a good idea. But with that said, is there a reason? Well, Madam Chair, do you want to, or Senator, do you want to answer?
Senator's Chair, I'm not sure if that's because that's how the other councils are set up, I'm assuming. Yes, I'm getting nods.
So again,
to replicate the other councils.
And this is a council to advise the governor and the state government.
Thank you, yes.
And so, at least in my reading, it would make sense that those appointments be made by the executive branch, of course, with consultation with people like members of Congress who regionally understand their districts.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I have an amendment to make the congressional district members be the appointment of these individuals to this council. And I'd like to introduce the A4 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Senator Anderson has an amendment to your bill, Senator Swadzinski. We're going to make sure you get a copy. And
Madam Chair, there was one line left out on 1.17, page 5, line 14, delete the governor and insert congressional members. That's an oral amendment.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. I appreciate your swiftness with this document. I want to make sure that Senator Swadzinski has a copy of the amendment. Mm-hmm. Do you have it before you?
I do.
So do members have the A4? The A4 is being distributed right now. I'm going to ask our council to describe for us this amendment and then to describe for us the author's oral amendment, so an amendment to the amendment. But let's start with the A4 amendment before we add the oral amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the A4 amendment replaces the governor as the appointing entity for the members of the council. And then the rest of the changes are really just conforming changes to accomplish that. I missed changing the word governor in one spot, and I'm not sure where that's at.
Any questions for our legal counsel? Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can the legislature tell members of Congress things they must do? Do we have that authority?
Thank you, Senator McQuaid.
Madam Chair and members, it wouldn't be a condition of them holding their office, so it is sort of the same as telling any sort of nonprofit that they are to appoint members.
Thank you, Senator McQuaid. So we have before us the A4 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson has an oral amendment to this amendment.
The oral amendment to the amendment is on 1.17 of that amendment, page 5, line 14. Delete the governor and insert congressional members.
To our legal counsel.
Madam Chair and members, actually, Senator Swadzinski's amendment made a change to that line. But I think it'll still work, yes. So on the A4, the oral amendment is after line 1.16, add the instruction page 5, line 14, delete governor, and insert congressional members.
So, Senator Swinzinski, as I understand this, Senator Anderson is making an amendment to change who is responsible for appointing members to this council.
I would be opposed to that amendment, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Swinzinski has testified that he is opposed to the A4 amendment with the Bruce Anderson amendment to the amendment. Let's first vote on the amendment to the amendment, the oral amendment. Is everybody clear about the question before us? And all those in favor of the amendment to the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed say no.
No.
No. And that amendment is not adopted. And before us then is the A4 amendment, which has been amended. Senator Anderson asked for a roll call. The roll call is granted. Are there any further questions about the amendment before us? Seeing no further questions, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Murphy?
No.
Vice Chair Mitchell?
No.
Lead Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Barr?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Swinzinski?
No.
Senator Drazkowski?
Aye.
Senator Fate?
No.
Senator Gustafson?
No.
Senator Jasinski?
Aye.
Senator Curran?
Aye.
Senator Lang? Are you on Zoom?
Aye.
Senator McQuaid?
No.
Senator Morrison?
No. There being 6 ayes and 8 noes, the amendment is not adopted. For the record, Senator Lang, can you please report in from where you are voting?
Olivia, Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Lang. We have the Senate File 194 before us. Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move the A3 amendment.
Senator Drazkowski moves the A3 amendment. We're going to get a copy to the author of the bill so he can consider that, and we'll distribute copies to the members. Senator Drazkowski, while that is being distributed, do you want to explain your amendment, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this simply modifies the part on page 2 that describes how per diems are handled and expenses, and clarifies that I expect the author didn't want legislators getting per diems in this bill, and so it clarifies it so that only the youth are getting the per diem and not legislators, which I would hope we get a unanimous vote on this one, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Drazkowski. From our legal counsel, anything more?
Madam Chair and members, the bill as written already only provided for compensation for the members appointed by the governor. The members appointed by the governor included the 9 members from the congressional districts, but also then a commissioner of a state agency. So the amendment eliminates compensation under 15.059 for that person. 15.059 actually also doesn't allow that person to collect per diem in the ordinary course of their work. So if they come during a work day, they wouldn't be paid anyway under the current language of the bill. But Senator Drazkowski's amendment will prevent that person from getting paid on a vacation day or on a weekend.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you. If I could ask counsel to make sure I know what my amendment's doing. So does it include the per diem for the youth and no adults? That's what I was hoping to do.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, yes, that will be the end result.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions? Well, for Senator Swinzinski, do you have a perspective on this amendment?
I would be opposed to this amendment as well.
Members,
thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Senator.
Madam Chair, roll call.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Are there further questions? Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, I'm shocked. So, Madam Chair, if we as legislators are forming out, you know, I struggle with the number of councils we have so far, and we seem to see more of these every year, more special committees for everything from, you know, protecting water and other things. But this is, if this is truly about the youth, we need to focus this per diem on the youth. We as adults and members of the legislature, we're already receiving in the Senate $86 per diem per day that we are here in session. And so this bill would provide an additional $55 per day for those legislative and executive branch members that may be on this commission. So, Senator Swazinski, I would encourage you to reconsider your approach. I think this is taking the eye off of the ball, and the ball here is the youth who are here with this council to provide us some feedback and some ideas and bring their ideas forward. But it shouldn't be about the adults in the room.
Thank you, Senator Drazkowski, and I am consulting with Ms. James over here just to make sure that I understand the intention and the language of the amendment. And as I understand it, the legislators who would be appointed to this council when it becomes law would be appointed by their caucuses through that process, and so would not be subject to the terms of this, nor would they receive per diem under this proposal. So the one, and if I get this wrong, correct me. So the one individual that would be subject to this who would earn per diem is the person appointed by the governor under Section 15.059, and that person would only be able to receive per diem if they were serving on the council on a day when they were not already at work. All right. So the scope of this is exceptionally small. Seeing no further questions, the clerk will take the roll.
Sorry, can I ask just a quick question, Madam Chair? Is the roll already gone?
I did call the question.
Okay, so sorry. My bad. Thank you.
Per our rules, Senator Lang, it would be great if you could be on camera while we're taking the vote. So please click on your camera. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Murphy?
No.
Vice Chair Mitchell?
No.
Lead Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Barr?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Swazinski?
No.
Senator Drazkowski?
Aye.
Senator Fateh?
No.
Senator Gustafson?
No.
Senator Jasinski?
Aye.
Senator Curran?
Aye.
Senator Lang?
Aye.
Senator May Quaid?
No.
Senator Morrison?
No. There being 6 ayes and 8 noes, the amendment is not adopted. And we have before us Senate File 194. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we already have in statute 124D.957, which is the Minnesota Youth Council Committee. And from what I heard testimony today from the gentleman and lady that presented, they like the council. They like what's happening there. I would think they would not want to see this council, as it's been deleted in this bill here, go away. And although this is supposedly being a replacement, I think the Youth Council Committee is in statute already. I don't see us needing to do anything. If anything, we should amend the Youth Council Committee and 124D. So I'd ask for a roll call on the passage of Senate File 194. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. A roll call has been requested. Are there further questions for Senator Swadzinski on Senate File 194? I just want to make sure I don't cut anybody off. All right, then. Seeing no further questions, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Murphy?
Aye.
Vice Chair Mitchell?
Aye.
Lead Anderson?
No.
Senator Barr?
No.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Swadzinski?
Yes.
Senator Drazkowski?
No.
Senator Fate?
Aye.
Senator Gustafson?
Aye.
Senator Jasinski?
No.
Senator Curran?
No.
Senator Lang?
No.
Senator May Quaid?
Aye.
Senator Morrison?
Aye.
There are 8 ayes and 6 noes. Therefore, Senate File 194, as amended, is adopted and will be re-referred to the Committee on Rules.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Committee.
Senator Kunesh. Senator Kunesh, we are short on time and you are here. And so I would like to get started with your bill, knowing that we might not finish it depending on, the work of the committee here. So welcome to the committee, and I'd like to move for you Senate File 386. Please announce yourself, identify yourself for the record, and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Senator Mary Kunesh, and I'm here to present to you a bill that would allow for a committee to redesign our state flag. And Madam Chair, we have a number of tribal leaders that came from across the state that would like to present today, so I would like to give them preference. But I do want to just point out that, to start out, that Minnesota's flag is ranked one of the 10 worst flags in North America. And I think it is time that we look to redesigning it and putting it into a perspective that is more historically accurate. One of the 5 principles of a good flag design is using meaningful symbolism. And so I think it's important that we look at the symbolism of the seal that is now sitting on our flag. The seal depicts a white settler taking possession of the land and the water of Minnesota, tilling the land in the foreground with a Native American on the horse in the background, riding off into the sunset. And this illustrates the story that fails to tell the authentic history of Minnesota's violence against its original inhabitants, the Dakota and the Anishinaabe. And so with that, I have much more to say, but I would like to invite our testifiers, and I'm sorry you stepped in right away, but I would like to invite our testifiers that have traveled the distance to come down and speak.
Thank you, Senator Kunesh, and members. We are going to go until a quarter to three to give the testifiers who have traveled an opportunity to testify. And Senator Kunesh, thank you for your patience with us. This bill is going to get a full hearing, and if we don't get it completed today, we will come back to it. I'm grateful for the fact that you have testifiers here. Please welcome to the committee. Announce your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you on behalf of the Yellow Medicine people of the Dakota Band. My name is Kevin Jensvold. I've served as the tribal chairman of the Yellow Medicine people for the last 18 years. I also want to acknowledge Tinta Winta Itancha Johnny Johnson, as well as Grand Portage Khakhatwa Itancha Bobby Deschamp. They're both leaders of their people. My people can be found in Federal Register 25, United States, identified as the Upper Sioux Community. We are located approximately 125 miles directly west of the metropolitan area. I want to thank Senator Kunish for allowing me this opportunity. I'm not much of a public speaker. I've been told that I talk too slow and I talk too much, and that's probably a bad thing at this late in the day for all of you. But again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this seal. I've had the opportunity to suggest to three governors, Pawlenty, Dayton, and now Walz, as to the difficulty that the seal depicts when it comes to Native Indigenous people. I serve a very small band, 547 members of the Dakota people. I sit here in a place that was once the homeland of the Dakota people, which was lost to the United States in 1805, referred to as the Pike Treaty. The genesis of our people is just a short distance away, a place called Bede Dota. You would probably call it Mendota. So our people have been here 10,000 years or however long the Creator has determined that we were granted this place to live. In that time, many things have changed for our people. One of those things that was demonstrated when the European came, that there were things that they wanted that we were willing to agree to. You talk about flags. Most tribal nations, Dakota people in particular, have what is called a sacred medicine wheel. In that sacred medicine wheel, there are four colors which represent the colors of all of the people in this sacred world we call Unchi Maka, our most oldest sacred grandmother. So we knew a long time ago, way before we had interaction with immigrants, that all of those races existed in that sacred circle. And in that sacred center of that circle, we call it Ho-Choka. Ho-Choka is where all of those races of people meet and live as one. Governor Walz has made comments about one Minnesota. And I'm not a politician, but I've questioned that slogan, if you will, because if that is to be the case, then we have to remember the first Minnesotans. This building was in existence the last time I came and testified in front of the lawmakers of Minnesota, but there was a movement to make English the official language of Minnesota. And I made a remark to somebody over at the old Senate building I questioned how much was in the budget for new letterhead, and in a, I suppose, a sarcastic manner, but a rhetorical question, because if English was to become the language, then Minnesota can no longer be the name of your state. Minnesota is the land that reflects the skies, the land of the cloudy water, depending upon the interpretation, inflection of how it's stated. So that in and of itself says we have standing as the first people of this land. 1851 treaty, the Traverse des Sioux Treaty, ceded 21 million acres of land to the European. I suppose, again, not being here and not knowing politics or how it was fashioned, but I suppose it was with the intent to create a state or a place for the European settlers to live. And it was during that time that I suppose the transition to becoming a minority in our own home took place. So then you have 1858 when the state of Minnesota was created. And to just backtrack a little bit, 1851 Traverse des Sioux Treaty stated that from the Big Stone Lake to, I believe, New Ulm, and I'm not a historian either, but 10 miles on either side of the Minnesota River would be our designated land. But when the state came to be in 1858, the northern side of the Minnesota River somehow became part of that state. Again, not being there, not knowing the political workings, the magic happened somewhere in a place called Washington, D.C., I suppose. But then you look at that and what that represents. To me, that seal says it's a passing of our people. We are invisible in our own homeland. I've said that for 18 years. Again, most people don't know Minnishota is a Dakota word. Most people don't know the history of the treaties that created this state. And the one question I do have, and they say that St. Anthony Falls in the background, so that is definitely Dakota land. And that can't be disputed. But my question is why does the gun point at the Dakota man in the background? I've had discussions here, and some people say, well, that's the rising sun, and that gun is not really pointed at him, and that's the settler waving to the Dakota man. And that's okay, because everybody's entitled to an opinion. But I think in this day and age, and there's a city, your neighboring city was the center of a storm not more than 3-4 years ago that brought about enlightenment as to racial divide, racial disparities, and maybe even racial equality moving forward as human beings. But there's a state down south changed their flag in 6 weeks because something that was depicted on their flag was offensive to another race of people. Again, I refer to them as forced immigrants, as the most politically correct way to say that in this room here. That was something that society picked up the cause and says, maybe today's the day we make a change. And the world took notice. But yet again, in our own homeland, the Dakota people and the Kakatawan people are invisible. I listen to a lot of campaign speeches and whatnot. They talk about all different types of races of people, but in my own homeland, we're probably thought of last. I have children and grandchildren, ages range from 36, my oldest child, to my youngest grandchild, 14, and I have to look at them every day and tell them I'm doing my best to make sure that we're not pushed off into the sunset by the mandates of a different people. And so that seal and what it represents, like I said, I've just offered suggestion because you are the rule makers, you are the lawmakers, and I respect, you know, your sovereign right to do what you do. You know, and as much as I expect that same consideration on when we're on tribal lands, those identified now as, you know, ours forever. So I just present that to you as a simple and humble human being. that if you look upon that seal, there's a line that's drawn. And it shows the divisiveness that shouldn't exist. It shows a gun that's going to enforce that divisiveness. And I think if you take a poll of most people in the world and you showed them a picture of that sort, they would say that's not comforting or welcoming. And that is not one Minnesota, but that is two distinct versions of a history. As of right now, I sit in defiance of federal law. It is illegal for me to sit here as a Dakota man because of what transpired in 1862. It was at the insistence of Governor Ramsey that the Dakota people be forever removed from lands or exterminated and removed from the borders of Minnesota. So if you know that part of history, then you will know when you look at that picture, regardless of the date that's put on there, that that's what it denotes. It wants to push the Indian out of the memory and the history of this great state. And I've said this many times, and I don't disparage my homeland, my mother's homeland, but I've taken a bit of heat and a bit of criticism that somehow I am unpatriotic to my own homeland, which would be foolish for anybody who knows me to believe. You know, I'm not against anything like that. I just say that there's probably a better thing. Because we call it Wapaha. Wapaha is the banner when the people move as a unit. It symbolizes everything that we are so that we know when we go somewhere that this is what those people represent. I see all sorts of races of people, you know, in this room, you know, in this country. And I guess I pose the question to you is what banner, what Wapaha do you want to be acknowledged for? Because it is reflecting upon all of us as to what we choose to support. And again, I thank you because I could go on and on. Like I said, I've had 18 years to think about this. I have 18 years to encourage the state to make a bold move. I know if that's been here 160 years, hard to move away from something that's been there for so long. Sometimes we don't even notice it. I've been fortunate to be on a panel of tribal-state relation training, and imagine, and I hope that some of you have been participants in that. But that I've made it known that there's simple things we can do. It takes bravery and courage, and again, I can't tell you what to do with your laws. I can't tell you what you should or shouldn't do, you know, as human beings. But again, a flag represents values and ideals, and it leads the people, and it shows who we are, and it reflects upon all that are underneath it. So I thank you, Senator Kunesh, for allowing me this time, for Madam Chair and the committee for allowing me this time. No, and just want to make sure that it is understood the history. You have to look at that to really see the magnitude and the impact that seal has on Dakota people and Kakatawan people. Because again, I want to stress that 1862, there was a war between the people, the Dakota people and Europeans. And we weren't in the fight to fight the pioneers that it depicts upon there. We were in the fight with the United States government. But that even was twisted as well because of the place called Camp Release in Montevideo, Minnesota, where we brought back the settlers that we had protected during the war and gave them back to the United States, and they considered them prisoners of war. But if you look in history, it'll show that we treated them quite differently. So again, I just want to share that little bit because it is a complex history. And if you take it all together, then that seal is a painful reminder of the diminishment of the Dakota people in this land, to the point where now, right now, like I said, I am here in defiance of federal law that was supported by the state of Minnesota to make that happen. So again, maybe the state of Minnesota could make something else happen. I say mitakiapi, we are all related, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chairman Chensfield, for making time, for sharing your testimony with us, and I hope that you will greet your children and your grandchildren and let them know that you were leading in committee today. I appreciate you and your presence here. Senator Kunesh, I know we're not going to finish your bill today. I'd like your guidance. I know you have two more testifiers, and we have a few minutes. Would you like either or both of your testifiers to join us today and offer their testimony, or should we pause at or should we pause?
We do have a testifier that thinks that he could do this quite quickly, so come on up.
Thank you, Senator Kunesh.
And I, Chair, I do have the A2 amendment. Sorry.
All right. Let us hear from the testifier.
Yep.
And we're going to get your bill in order before we're finishing up. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. Please speak briefly, and let's proceed.
I'll try to keep this quick. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Thomas Atkins. I'm a fourth-year undergraduate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I've been working with your colleagues in the House on this bill for 4 or 5 years now. I think we've heard a lot about why this flag needs to change, so I won't elaborate on that, and rather just show examples of both the creativity of Minnesotan citizens and others in recent flag design processes. So, if you'll turn your attention to figure 3, here we have 4 proposed Minnesota state flag designs from a number of different people in the community, just showing the wide variety and breadth of designs and the artistic creativity of Minnesotans who have been turning their attention to this project in the earliest case since 1989. All of these compliant with modern flag design guidelines. And then I would also like to highlight 2 recent flag redesign processes, both here locally and elsewhere in other places nationally. So in 2019, over the span of a year, the flag of Duluth was changed from what you see in the top left to what you see in the top right, following over 200 designs being submitted by members of the community in a public selection process. I'd also like to highlight your attention to the flag of Utah, where 2 years ago, their legislature, with broad bipartisan support, passed a bill very similar to the one you're being asked to consider today. And after receiving 5,700 submissions, 2,500 of which from students, a very public task force chose the design you see in the bottom left, which is being presented to their legislature this year for approval. So thank you for your time, and I would hereby advocate for Senate File 386. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your testimony and for your brevity. I really appreciate it. Members, Senator Kunesh has an author's amendment. It is the A2 amendment. Senator Kunesh, do you have do you want to offer any very brief explanation, and then we're going to move your amendment?
Sure. So this this is a delete all, and it just updates the bill to the language that we think is best in kind of creating this redesign commission.
Senator Kunesh offers the A2 amendment. Are there questions? This is an author's amendment. Seeing no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that amendment is adopted. Members, we have the amended Senate File 386 before us with about 2 minutes left in the hearing. I understand there are not amendments prepared for this. if people felt we could move this forward, it's going to go to rules next, it would be awesome. But I don't want to shortchange any of the testimony or any of your questions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I think we need some discussion on this bill.
All right. All right. I think this is such an important issue, and I'm so grateful that you're bringing it forward, Senator Kunesh. And I'm sorry about the timing, but I want you to know how committed I am, and we are going to bring this back for a fuller discussion because it is important, and it's an issue that's been waiting for a very long time. So with that, I'd like to lay Senate File 386 on the table, and we will come right back to it, Senator Kunesh. And I'm grateful for you and your testifiers and for your patience.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kunesh. And with that, our meeting today is adjourned.